This portion of the show is brought to you by Eric Boatner, Allstate Insurance Agency in Flagstaff.
This is the Jeff Horovitz Show.
All right, welcome everyone. Thanks for listening. Jeff Horovitz here. Happy to be here with you today. Hope you're all having a great day. I'll share some of my travel stories here in just a little bit, see if I can bring Olivia and Angela in. So we'll get to that. And as always, you got comments. Love to hear from you. Talk with Jeff at iCloud.com. Get those in, and we'll share those and sprinkle those throughout the show as I'm traveling for the, you know, another week and a half here still. I do have Joe Galley from the Greater Flagstaff Chamber of Commerce give us a big update here on what's going on, not only locally, but on the legislative side, and also we'll get into some of the things coming out of D.C. How you been, Joe?
Good. I've been good. It's busy time of year. Great to see you, and I'm always grateful for the time with you.
So. Yeah, the legislature cranking it, and getting the final bills. When is it, like April, when do they stop bills and switch to budget? Yeah.
So last year, if you recall, they had the longest session in history. There were a number last year. So record number of vetoes by an Arizona governor. I think it was like over 140 or 150 bills vetoed. Probably record number of bills introduced, although that's probably been surpassed this session. A couple thousand bills introduced down there at the Arizona legislature. And they typically, what they call sine die, which is the end of the legislature. After the budget's been passed up to the governor and the governor signs the budget, that typically takes place either at the end of April or early May. And last year, they carried it out through the end of July, believe it or not. Sine die took place on July 31. But they had some carryover issues that they had to deal with. So they weren't actually meeting through the summer. They don't like to be, as much as anybody, they don't like to be in the valley when it's super hot.
Yeah, it gets hot. But, you know, that's going to be fixed this year because there's a chief heat officer coming.
I heard that.
Line.
Yeah, that's so crazy.
You do that, it's probably going to be snowing.
That'll probably put less demand on our second housing.
This is going to. It's going to turn out great.
Get the heat number down there. Well, the legislature, super busy, and we're tracking a lot of things because it's interesting. It's just an interesting dynamic. We've got traditionally some very good partners who care about business and how government impacts business through regulations, taxes, of course. We've gotten some great legislation passed in recent sessions and signed by governors, including reducing the assessment value, the ratio on commercial property.
That was big because of how much they went up, too.
So we work for things like that. And then we've seen, you know, sort of through the COVID era, and it's carried over a little bit. We've seen the party that's traditionally a friend of business, some Republicans have introduced legislation that caused a lot of heartburn for business owners, like things like requiring cash-only transactions and some types of employer mandates or sanctions related to vaccines and or, you know, the employer can do this or the employer can't do that. We like to not have those.
Just stay out.
Let our employers make the decisions about employees.
So you're saying a big movement now is a cashless society, but on a private side, if a business wants to just take the digital payments, which would be your card or your Venmo or whatever people are using, you're saying, well, that's a business decision, not a government decision.
Correct.
Yeah. And you don't have to go there.
Yeah, no.
Right? I mean, if you don't like what a business is doing.
Yeah, we've got good competition. The economy's pretty strong. No one can understand it. It keeps rolling along with a lot of steam.
I get their argument, though, because they're worried about a central bank digital currency. So they're worried about that. That's a little different because then that's forced by government for every transaction.
Yeah, and we can have that discussion if the Fed tries to bring that forward.
A couple more hours we would need for that one. You mentioned COVID, though, and it seems like such a long time ago, but it really wasn't. And just recently I was talking about the governor taking COVID money and partnering with an outside group to forgive medical debt here in Arizona.
Yeah.
But it goes to show you how when you flush money into the system, it's still rolling through the system years later. Yep. And that's why they're still not shaking this inflation, is my opinion.
Yeah, I think you're right. And of course, that's a concern for business too as well, right? Because costs are continuing to go up. We see that in labor. We're very concerned about our ever-increasing labor costs.
Yep.
And then other resource costs to produce, whether it be raw materials, you know, housing, of course, in addition to the labor aspect, the materials for new housing, and we have a particular concern about that in our community, given that when you couple those things with an over-regulatory environment and create really low supply where you have really high demand, you end up with things like we have, which is a housing market that's 38% to 40% on average higher than the national average. And Phoenix sits at that national average. So when you're an employer and you're looking to keep a key employee, whether it's a manager, some typically at the management level, not an entry level employee, you have to compete against your competitor in the Valley for housing.
With cheaper housing,
And when the housing dollars were 38 to 40 cents more in the metro area, our employers have consistently said here recently and in recent years, you know, we're struggling because our employee who's qualified and we love having them will end up making their way to the Valley for the same job.
Yeah, it's not like
dollar goes further.
It's not like you're getting paid half to go down there or something.
Right.
You're getting paid the same, sometimes more maybe. And the housing is dramatically lower in cost.
And that's, Phoenix is also, it's got its housing concerns as well. Mm-hmm. And I don't think they're building as fast as they would like to down in the Valley. And we've got a couple bills that we're tracking on housing at the legislature. What's happened is where we have a very heightened challenge with housing in our community that's really been government driven, right? Because control of housing supply restricted over a number of decades by those who were in control of mayor and council and city staff intentionally to keep growth at a very low rate.
You're talking land supply.
1% to 2%.
Okay.
Well, I'm also talking lengthy permitting, costly, drawn-out processes to get through permitting, and other zoning code requirements. Things I know that you're a big fan of things like EV plug mandates
for your
garage, right?
Yeah.
And blower door tests on every new, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you remember one of my favorite stories was back in the late 2000s when energy codes were a big thing for the sustainability department. And The list of these things that came forward, like, you know, mandating thicker insulation and thicker walls and, you know, higher quality windows and sorts of things that really drive up the bottom line cost of a home, special concrete you use in your driveway or whatever, those things, when they came up in the late 2000s and we stood up against them, you know, there was a guy who is a local builder in town and he had, I think 6 or 8 units over off of Solier. Tammo Shanter was the behind the apartment complex there. And he said, look, I've got a teacher and a firefighter qualified to get into this unit at $300,000. But if I'm required to put all these things into my new construction, then the price goes up to $315,000, and then these people don't qualify.
Yes, yes.
And the response from mayor and council at that time was, well, the banks should change their lending requirements, right? And you go, hold on a second.
Let me call up the banks.
You can't shift an entire industry and force them to make decisions about lending, right?
Because the Flagstaff City Council thinks so.
So what we're doing currently, and I give credit where credit is due, as do you. I think we're in an environment where we've seen a realization of the impacts of these things on housing locally, and we've had, I think, in recent mayor and councils and city staff a penchant for moving housing stock to the community.
It's shifted a bit.
And we're in the process right now. I know we were going to talk about the state, you know, but what's happened, Jeff, I guess globally is that the global sort of pressure on housing, the huge demand outstripped by by lack of supply, has created a discussion at the state legislature about what we do, what communities do. And in recent sessions, we've seen some really drastic bills swung way to the other side of the pendulum, where legislation was introduced that said cities and towns should no longer have the ability to have any zoning requirements.
I've seen those. You
could basically, and in some cases, if you have a plot of land and you're within a certain range to major transportation corridor, be it a street, a bus stop, or a freeway, or what have you, and it's commercial, you can go ahead and build residential on that commercial lot without having a rezone.
Love it.
And
get rid of all the building codes.
Because you're a property rights guy, and so are we.
Well, let me ask you about this a little bit. Let's get into
it. And we like that, by the way. We supported that. Yeah. The cities and towns, we're apoplectic.
I'm sure.
No way. Local control. Got to have local control to determine the, you know, path for our community. And that really hasn't worked, in the sense that we as a community have just been let down by prior mayors and council on the housing issue.
Yeah, it's a huge problem.
Now we have a huge problem.
Yeah, but anyway, let me get back to that, because I want to switch back to the legislature and some of these proposed bills. Yeah. But before we do that, I do want to mention my first great sponsor of the day, and that's Just Wireless. Help you save some money, and we're already talking about money, Joe.
Love those guys.
A lot of people are struggling, and when I had Zach on the most recent time he was on, he was saying he used to be kind of a boutique shop. Now he's more like utility, because people need to find more affordable options for phones, refurbished phones, or keep their existing smartphone going. You can go to Just Wireless, get your existing smartphone fixed, cracked screens, charging ports, and the big ones, the batteries. Stop on by there. It's on Milton Avenue in West Flagstaff. So no matter where you're at in Northern Arizona, you come over from Williams or coming from the Verde Valley, stop by Just Wireless. Get more information at justwirelessaz.com. Joe Galley's here with me, and he's the senior advisor for public policy at the Greater Flagstaff Chamber of Commerce. And Joe, the housing, the good news is that so many people have recognized there is a housing crisis. The bad news is politicians have recognized there's a housing crisis and they're going to do something. That is my concern, because there's things they can do or not do that will fix it. But in my experience with governments and people's lack of experience when it comes to the private sector, especially business and housing and things, government almost always does all the wrong things and causes the problem actually to get worse.
Yeah, we're a big fan of just, of course, we want both reasonable and sensible growth, but we're beyond that now, because we've got we're beyond over-management for growth in this community, because we've got a housing study that the city conducted and put out on the street that said, and this was 2 years ago, by the way, I think, we're 7,000 units short. And that was 2 years ago.
Oh, that's crazy.
And what's happened is it's pushed our ability for entry-level employees, for kids getting degrees from NAU to be able to stay in town, to get a good job and stay here. And it's just created a wide gap. So we're looking to replace that. Some of the things at the legislature, a couple of bills I'll give you, that you wouldn't have seen 5 years ago, because even though we were screaming, hey, we need help, from a Republican legislature to peel back on the mandates at local levels and force some uniformity amongst cities, towns, and counties, because not all cities, towns, and counties have been overly restrictive with their housing development.
Yeah, no, that's true.
Think about valley towns that have grown. I mean, Gilbert, Queen Creek, Casa Grande, Lake Havasu City, down the freeway from us. I mean, they've seen tremendous growth in investment in housing, and their business communities thrive as a result of that, where we still remain very challenged. So Senate Bill 1506 allows unused commercial areas to be converted into neighborhoods with, quote, missing middle housing, like duplexes and cottage courts. We like that. There's a bill, Senate Bill 1665, talks about industry professionals from the private sector approving specific permits relevant to their field if a city does not respond to a lawfully submitted permit within a reasonable time frame. So, you know, what cities and towns have done for a long time, that have they've used the process to make it
to kill it.
Yeah, to kill it. Yeah. To either kill the development altogether, not get it through P&Z, have it fail at Planning and Zoning Commission, and or have it be so expensive that the developer just turns around and walks away.
Well, how many times have you seen developers come into a place like, say, Flagstaff, and they've spent years and probably millions in planning, and eventually you still see that empty lot there? Well, I can point to a bunch throughout the community.
So a week or so ago, we were at the legislature, and we did chamber day at the legislature. So we had chamber executives from all across the state. We do this annually, once a year. We meet with our elected officials physically. It was on a Monday, and it was a Monday morning. We had Senator Peterson, who's the president of the Arizona Senate, and Speaker Toma, and the housing question came up. And Senator Peterson said, look, to a room full of 50-plus chamber presidents from communities like Sierra Vista, Yuma, Havasu, Valley communities, Flagstaff, Cottonwood, Sholo, every corner of the state that you can imagine, right? We're represented in that room. And he said, look, I'm a born and raised here in Gilbert, and I've been in the development business, and I built some housing myself. And it used to be the case where I could walk in, and within 6 months, I was fully permitted. Mm-hmm. I was fully platted. I had graded my property. I had utilities and streets, and I was starting construction on my units. Now that process is into the years, to your point, right? And that is what that's the challenge that we face today, is getting these units to market. And that's what contributes to the entry level cost, as well as the long list of requirements. Like, we think there should be an EV plug in every garage and a blower door test on every front door, before you get, your housing occupancy.
Mark Howitt, who does, frequent guest hosting for me and stuff like that. He's also a builder.
Yeah.
He was saying that the new energy codes, if we adopt the next version, it's so stringent for the attic insulation that it requires all new beefier trusses and supports, and the cost balloons from there for not much of a savings on energy at that point. We're already putting a lot of insulation
in. And the house that's getting sold here in town, that's in the seven figures, that buyer really is not concerned about what level of insulation they have in the roof, because how much it's adding to the cost of the home.
Yeah.
And that's where we've driven this community, unfortunately. We're not really building housing for the workforce. And so hopefully we can, look, again, I think that there's been a change of heart and a realization by some. I mean, certainly those that sit on council that have been there for quite a while, guys like McCarthy, Jim McCarthy has said, has been part of that crew when he was on planning and zoning that really worked to limit growth. But then he attended a conference. He's admitted this. He said this publicly from the dais. I went to a realtor conference here in town, and I learned about how the housing industry works. And then in subsequent conversations about new units and specific developments, he's just said, the answer to our housing problem is having more units. Yeah. We just got to build more units. So, I mean,
imagine that, supply and demand.
Kudos to those who are embracing this.
McCarthy came around on that. That's good.
I wanted to touch on, before we shift gears, because I know.
Yeah, real quick, what is, and I'll let you continue with the legislative bills there and the housing. What is the likelihood of any of these making it through the process? Because unless it's going to a citizen or a initiative process that the legislature sends to the voters, the governor, as you mentioned earlier, vetoed a lot last year. She's already vetoing a lot, and she tends to veto a lot of bills like this. Do any of these have any hope and prayer, especially when you're talking about ones that want to supersede, quote-unquote, local control? The Arizona League of Cities will flip out, and the governor, I would think, would veto this stuff.
Well, the housing problem does not discriminate, okay? So it's become difficult for everybody, for all classes of workers, to get into housing in a number of areas in the state. And I think this governor, I want to give her an opportunity to sign sound legislation that lifts up all Arizonans. And that's what a lot of these bills do in the housing component that's down there at the legislature. They're not uber partisan. Some of these are passing by large bipartisan margins out of the House and the Senate down there. And I think this governor in her first year, she vetoed a number of bills and a record number of bills. And the legislature put a lot of partisan stuff on her desk. And it's unfortunate that they didn't see eye to eye on some of those things. Some of that stuff I agreed with. We have a bill I want to get to that I don't think the governor would sign, but and it's passed out of the Senate. It's making its way through the House. Well,
which one's right? That? I mean, she's vetoed a lot. She even vetoed the tamale bill last year, which was bipartisan.
Yeah, but that's coming back, too, so we'll see.
I think
that
she got
again.
A lot of flack for that. But, yeah, what's the one that you think she will veto or that's going to have some trouble?
Well, that's our bill. So Senate Bill 1213, I've been on the show and talked with you about this in the past. It was introduced last session. It provides a tax credit to businesses who operate in a community that has a higher wage mandate than the state.
Yeah, Senator Rogers was just talking about this one.
Correct. Yeah, this is her bill, actually.
Oh, okay.
And we would love to give her the Free Enterprise of the Year Award, Entrepreneur of the Year Award for recognizing. And her stick-to-itiveness, she deserves, because she could have very easily not introduced this bill again. But she came back to us and said, look, we didn't get down across the finish line last year. Would you like to introduce the bill again? And I said, yes. We can always use the help. And Senator Rogers said, well, what do we need to do to get this bill a little further down the road? And so I spoke with some folks in the Valley that are maybe a little more down, understand how to get things through down there than I do. And I said, any suggestions? They said, yeah, you know what? If this bill had a cap on it in terms of total credit amount allowed, $5 million, and total hit to the city, because when you have a tax credit that goes through law in the state legislature, you have to be able to pay for that.
Okay.
So how did we pay for the tax credit? Well, the credit would come out of what's called urban revenue share or state shared revenue. That's taxes that are collected by business transactions
and sent back
to DOR, Department of Revenue in Phoenix, and then DOR comes up with a formula and they say, okay, communities, this is the kind of money that's been coming in from your community, and here it goes. It's coming back to you in the form of urban revenue share. It's how the state functions. It's how the localities function. And the localities base their budgets a lot on that revenue stream. Now, the previous bill that we introduced last year would have wiped out Flagstaff's urban revenue share, 17 to 19 million.
Because there was no cap. Rewind a second, though. This is a bill that has to do with the Flagstaff wages.
It doesn't, in the sense that Flagstaff would be eligible, Flagstaff businesses would be eligible for the tax credit because they're in an environment that has a higher wage mandate than the state. Currently, it's $3.05. Last year, it was $2.95 difference between Flagstaff's wage mandate and the state wage mandate. Now it's $3.05. An hour. To make it easy for your listeners, if you have $1 million payroll in the city of Flagstaff this year, then your payroll anywhere else in the state would be $700,000 using round numbers. We give you the bill would give you a tax credit on the difference. $300,000, 5% tax credit, $15,000 that you could then have back to your business through this. And it's capped up to $5 million. It's first come, first serve. I don't love it, but it doesn't do what we got criticized for last year, which is completely wipe out the city's state shared revenue because the impact is so great here. And it doesn't take money from the general fund because the credit would overflow into the general fund. And then citizens in Peoria, Yuma, Sierra Vista, Tucson, Green Valley, they would be paying for Flagstaff's problem. And the legislators last year said, look,
that's not my fault. It's not my constituents.
We like the idea here. We like the concept.
Okay.
We don't want our citizens to pay for your problem.
I got some questions here for you, Joe, but I got to take a quick break.
Sure.
This is an interesting bill here, and I think it's an initiative that the citizens vote on, correct?
This
is going to the governor?
Yeah, this would, if it gets through the House, it would go up to the governor.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. Let's talk about this here a little bit more. Talk with Jeff at iCloud.com. Hey, it is a great time to head on up to Sportsman's Bar and Grill, voted best sports bar in Flagstaff, just north of downtown, but not in downtown. So you got plenty of parking right there in the Bashes Shopping Center. They have great specials every day. It starts at lunch, goes into the evening, like Taco Tuesday, like Wing Wednesday, Sliders on Thursday. They've always got something on the $4 menu as well, great drink specials, all the TVs for your sports action. Head on up there to Sportsman's Bar and Grill. Also, don't forget about my good friend Rob Wilson, and I think Mark's got him in or has had him in. I haven't been paying as much attention from Timberline Firearms and Training. Second Amendment, so important to Timberline, and as I know it is for so many of you out there, and keeping proficient when it comes to firearms skills. They've got tons of training out at Timberline Firearms and Training. Call them up, 928-526-7900. Book them to go fast. There's only so many classes available. Plus, they've got all the, you know, accessories, firearms, ammunition, Liberty safes, and a great indoor shooting range out at Timberline Firearms and Training. Back in May. Hey, if you're listening to the podcast, please give us a great review and also give us a comment in there. If you're not listening to the podcast, subscribe. Look up the Jeff Orbit Show. Also on video, Rumble, follow us there. And on YouTube, subscribe. We appreciate everyone who's done that.
You're listening to the Jeff Orbit Show.
Last year, Angela and I got all new blinds from the Blind Brothers. Great Northern Arizona company. You need new blind shutters or shades, whether you're Northern Central Arizona, Prescott area, Flagstaff, Verde Valley, Sedona. Call my good friends at the Blind Brothers. They lay out all your options and they make sure they get you set up with the right price. You know, it's not just the most expensive ones they put out there. They do the installation. Highly recommend that unless you want them all crooked and you do it yourself. I had them do the installation. Mention the Jeff Orbit Show and get half off the installation. Call the Blind Brothers at 928-634-2423, 928-634-2423, or go to theblindbrothers.com. Joe Galley's here from the Greater Flagstaff Chamber of Commerce. My week of traveling, and I'm sharing stories and pics up at talkwithjeff.com, so check that out. Hey, if you have time to go out on to Williams to the Rodeo Steakhouse and get a great steak.
How is that place?
Always love it.
I haven't been out there yet.
Great steaks. Yeah, great steaks.
I gotta get out there.
Yeah, great steaks, yeah. Great ribs. The pepper steak is awesome. And I love Williams because it's just like...
Oh, it's stuck in time, isn't it?
Yeah, yes. I love it. And that's part of the chamber, too.
True. And we've got a number of businesses that are members with us. Let me give you a shout out to Grand Canyon Railway.
Yeah, yeah.
We gave them...
Fun stuff.
A couple weeks ago, we honored them at our chamber annual meeting. So our Chamber of Commerce hosts an annual meeting. You know about it. It's 550, 600 people typically, the High Country Conference Center. We have the governor. Governor was with us and did a little chat with our APS president.
She didn't come on the show, but that's okay.
It's
all good. It's all good.
Yeah. We had other, you know,
Ducey used to come on the show, but I got mad at him.
We've had him a number of times. I know that you didn't like some of the stuff Doug did, but he was great for business. And we instituted a Green Business Award. And all the Green Business Award
is... Green New Deal?
Green Business Award. No, we're not subs. So Green Business Award, just to honor those who proactively on their own without the government telling them to
Good. So it should be done.
Yeah, take initiative.
Yeah.
To have a lower footprint on the environment.
That's a good thing. If you're a builder and you want to put in that EV port and that's like your thing.
Yeah.
Have at it, man. Put in two.
I know. Put in three.
I mean, I don't care.
I know.
You know, anyway, that's good. That's good news. So back to this housing.
So we recognize Grand Canyon Railway.
Grand Canyon. I did the Santa thing one year. You know, they do that with
they're great.
North
they're
Pole
great
or something.
Great partners with us.
Something to do with Santa.
And the community. Yep.
Just to hit this a little more. So the tax credit, because it's not just geared towards Flagstaff, because I think Tucson voted for a higher wage too.
Yeah.
So if your city has a higher wage, the legislature is like, and you contend that, and I would contend as well, well, costs more to do that. You shouldn't have done that. Well, you're not getting back as much shared revenue. So we're going to offer that tax credit to the businesses so that they can make up that differential basically.
Yep.
But it caps at $5 million total. So first
per
come,
year.
First serve.
Yep. Per year.
So you first one to get that into the city or the state or whatever?
Yeah, I think so. We didn't have a cap last year. And again, what happens when you have a bill with a fiscal ramification is that the Joint Legislative Budget Committee, known as JLBC, a nonpartisan arm of the legislature, and the government in Phoenix, you know, they put what's called a fiscal note on your bill. So last year, I got a call from JLBC, and they said, hey, we're about to drop this fiscal note on your bill.
You got a bad note, didn't you?
I did, yeah, because, at the end of the day, I didn't have a problem with it, but I got the argument that the rest of the Arizona taxpayers shouldn't be paying for Tucson and Flagstaff's problems,
it's a fair policy. It's a fair argument, yeah.
And so I understood, which is why we went to a cap this year. But here's my take. Look, if we can get this through and we get a governor who understands the challenge that our businesses face in our communities and says, okay, I'm going to sign this bill and it becomes law, that gives our businesses currently, who are at a disadvantage, by the way. I mean, this is, so the big talk from the left constantly is equity, right? Everybody's got to be equal. Everybody's got to have the same. Everybody's got to drive the same car. They got the same house. They got to have the same income, right? Because that's what Marxism and socialism is, right? And that's the big push. Well, except for labor, right? When our town is going to have a higher wage mandate than the rest of the state. And so what we're saying is, okay, well, if you really for equity, then let's have, and I like to refer to this bill as an equity bill. Why not?
Just using their wording.
Yeah, but what, listen, it's exactly what it is. The wage mandate in this town is unfairly skewed. And by the way, it's contributing to the massive inflation that we've seen. You and I talked about it offline, how expensive it is to eat out in this town. And, you know, it should be easier for our businesses to do business.
It should be, but then, okay, let me play the devil's advocate here or the leftist or the maybe the conservative from another city that's like, the Flagstaff voters are dumb enough to vote for that two times, you know, the wage thing. So, you know,
this
sorry.
Doesn't change the wage, though. That's
I hear you, but it's a consequence of it.
So those in the Senate, by the way, it passed the Senate 16-12. There were two Democrats that were not there that day that had passed on the floor. Otherwise, it would have been 16-14. Partisan vote. So we didn't get bipartisan support. And I was down at the legislature when this bill was heard in the Senate Finance Committee. And one of the Democrats who voted against it in committee, he's from Yuma area, and he was talking about how expensive McDonald's is in Gila Bend when he has to drive up to the legislature. And I was saying, buddy, you're making my argument for me, you know.
But Joe, they think it's just the companies make the price higher magically.
Yeah.
I mean, Joe Biden thinks that. He has a strike force to fight inflation.
Listen,
and he fights Doritos during the Super Bowl. He just thinks that people raise it this with, and there's no impact of the government.
I want to share a real life anecdote with you and your listeners. I was out on the east side of town the other night, and I stopped into one of the mini marts there, right between the Del Taco and the Wendy's on Route 66. Yeah. And I was just needed two bottles of water. So I walked in to get my bottles of water, and there's nobody at the counter. And you know what's at the counter? It's a computer screen with a scanner. And
oh, they have self-checkout at the little store now.
At the community mart. At the community mart, there's self-checkout, and it says, push here, you know, scan your products. Is this your total? Bang. Pay here, and have a nice day. And
it's going small scale now.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So the
automatic pay, self-pay, self-checkout. Yeah.
And moving to a society where there's less job opportunities, that's what wage mandates do.
Yeah.
And it's just not we've got an equity bill. So we're looking to level the playing field.
Yeah. I mean, it's good you got it out there. She may veto it, of course, but let the chips lie where the chips lie, and then you know where she stands. What other ballot initiatives? I have had on several members of the legislature. I've talked about several initiatives. I guess the legislature has the ability to just send it straight out to the voters.
It's called a continuing resolution. I'm so glad you brought this up, because this is a dynamic shift in state politics, given that you've got a governor from one party and a majority in the legislature from the other. And the majority in the legislature sent that governor a bunch of bills last year, and
she squashed it.
A majority of them got vetoed.
Yeah.
This legislature came back this year and said, okay, we're not going to play ball that way. We have the ability to pass what's called a continuing resolution. So it can originate from the House or the Senate. And what it means is that the language for what would become state law goes to the ballot without going to the governor's desk, and the voters will vote on this in November.
It's going to be a scroll.
It could be, because there's a record number of these that have been introduced this session in Phoenix, and I want to talk about one in particular.
Okay, go ahead.
It is SCR 1006. This is the property tax refund nuisance enforcement. So what this says, and by the way, I think this is going to be on the ballot in November, and voters are going to get a chance to vote on this. It says that if your city, town, or county,
Actually, this is Joe. This is the one that Senator Rogers talked about last week. I think she was just came off the floor after the third read and then came on our show. She
That's
was
right.
like, she was voted. Delayed to come on the show because they supported it and voted it, and it's heading to your ballot.
Happened last Monday.
Yes.
100%.
Yes. So that thing's going on your ballot. Yep. That'll get you get to vote on it. So, but go ahead. What is it?
Senator County maintains a public nuisance or adopts and follows a policy pattern of practice of declining to enforce laws, ordinances, or legislation that prohibit illegal camping, obstructing public thoroughfares, loitering, panhandling, public urination or defecation, public alcohol consumption or possession or use of illegal substances, and the property owner incurs documented expenses to mitigate the effects of the policy pattern or practice, you can get a refund on your property taxes
for the cost.
And guess where? Guess how it gets paid? I'll give you two guesses, three guesses. The first two don't count.
Okay.
How does this tax credit get paid?
Ferries.
Comes out of state.
You only gave me one guess.
I told you, first two don't count.
I thought it was going to just be the money tree or something, or
no,
unicorn
dust.
No, the
tax credit gets paid out of the city's urban revenue share. Identical to our
to your proposal, but unlike yours, this is going directly to the voters.
Correct.
And this may actually have a decent shot of passing because everybody is watching.
Yeah.
And I had on Joe Setyan from the Goldwater Institute talking about how some Phoenix people went to Portland to learn how to deal with the homeless issue, which is not a good place to go.
No.
But everyone's seeing Portland, and they're seeing San Francisco. And I've heard stories down in Phoenix where people in the alleys behind their homes have homeless encampments now, and their kids are playing right there, and needles are like flying over the wall and stuff. So I think this one, the imagery and the real life circumstances is happening right now. And people are really concerned that
about what's going on. It's not just in the barrio neighborhoods where this is occurring.
No.
It's occurring
everywhere.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
So it's happening if you're driving in Gilbert or Chandler in what is mainstream middle America, suburbia.
Yeah.
Any town in the valley, you pick it. Of course, it's here. It's been here. Panhandling on street corners has been very visible here
under
for
the bridges.
A long time.
And
so, but this has major ramifications because
it's a financial hit.
It takes away huge monies from cities, towns, and counties who are not proactively making sure.
Is it capped?
No, there is.
Do you have to go to court, though, to recover, to prove? Because, like, if I spend $1,500 in cleanup, how easy is it going to be for me to say, hey, city, you owe me $1,500?
That's a good question.
That may be the problem.
Yeah, so this law requires the state treasurer, or if it became law, right, if the voters voted for it, to withhold the aggregate refund amounts from DOR from the distribution. So I think you apply to the state.
Okay.
You don't go through the people whose money's
because they're going
they
to tie it
shell
up.
Out.
Yeah.
Right.
It's not some local committee where they stack it and then, oh, no, you're not getting that money back.
Caps the refund amount at the amount a property owner paid for the prior tax year in primary property taxes, so you can't ask for more than what you paid.
So it could be hundreds or a couple thousand.
Yeah. And it requires a city, town, or county within 30 days after receiving the ADOR notice to accept or reject the refund and notify ADOR of its determination and directs ADOR to pay
the property owner. Got to do something.
This all has to do with interaction between the property owner and the Department of Revenue.
Yeah.
But I think it probably is pretty popular on the ballot.
No, I think so. Okay, let's hit some more of this when we come back. And if you got a comment, love to hear from you. Talk with Jeff at iCloud.com. If you need to refinance your home right now, call Kim Dawson at Nova Home Loans. She's also working with a lot of people who are kind of mired in credit card debt. And says, this sucks that this has happened, that people have been actually putting on their credit card and have had to because of inflation, food and gas and things that just, it's gone. You know, you eat it, you drive it, you burn the gas. If you have your home though and you've been in there a few years, you probably got some good equity. Why don't you call Kim Dawson and see if she can help you out and get that thing consolidated into one loan, hopefully save you quite a bit of money every month. Mention the Jeff Horvitz Show, get $250 off the lender's fee at closing. Call Kim Dawson at 928-310-6458, 928-310-6458. Go to novahomeloans.com/Kim Dawson. Kim Dawson, NMLS 697411. Nova Home Loans, NMLS 3087, BK number 090242. Equal housing opportunity, subject to credit approval. Terms and conditions may apply. Back in a minute. you're listening to the podcast, please give us a great review and also give us a comment in there. If you're not listening to the podcast, subscribe. Look up the Jeff Horvitz Show. Also on video, Rumble, follow us there. And on YouTube, subscribe. We appreciate everyone who's done that.
This is the Jeff Horvitz Show.
If you get a rock chip in your windshield, call my friends at Diamond Auto Glass first. Get that fixed before it spreads. Diamond Auto Glass on 4th Street in Flagstaff. I've been going there for years. I think Angela just brought her Mini in there because she had a big crack. She needed a whole new windshield. They'll take care of that too. They have the technology to line up all those cameras you got in the technology in the glass is amazing nowadays. Call Diamond Auto Glass 928-779-4140. 928-779-4140 or go to thedifferenceisclear.com. All right, Joe Galli is here with the Greater Flagstaff Chamber of Commerce. He's agreed to stick around for another segment in the next hour because we only got to the state portion of our list.
Yeah, right? So much to talk about.
Yeah, so much going on there. And Joe's a world traveler, too. He's been all over the place. So have you gotten to travel?
I've been to all seven.
Yeah, he's actually been to all seven continents.
Yeah, I have.
Yeah,
lucky me.
I know a year or two ago you did Antarctica and hit your seven.
It was brilliant.
Yeah, so that is on my bucket list.
Yeah.
I want to do that, as you know, traveling all this week and next week in Europe, and my daughter's in Athens doing an exchange school. I can't believe she's like halfway through that. This, but great experience. She's been going all over Europe and stuff. And
so powerful, the education level.
It is, and she's paying. She saved up, and she's paying for
good
it all.
For her.
NAU has a cool exchange program that's going on.
Great program at NAU. Yes,
I've got my next year. We do our 50th state, Alaska.
So
this summer we're actually going to fly back to do New England. I've done it before, but the kids haven't.
Yeah.
So we're all going to be at 49, by the end of June.
Okay.
And then, for my 50th birthday, we're doing 50 by 50.
Yeah.
And all the kids and everything, we're all doing it. And I plan on driving all the way up to Alaska.
Oh,
we take
great.
A real long trip.
And yeah.
You've been up to Alaska.
Yeah,
since.
It's, it's great.
I'm looking forward to that one. It's going to be a big one.
It's an amazing place.
Yeah. I'm going to do a lot of camping. So I don't know about the grizzly bears, but we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
We'll bring some horns or the, right. Or the spray.
Yeah. You need bear spray. Yeah.
Yeah.
Camping,
we'll do that. Okay.
Sure.
Joe Galli's going to stick around. We'll hit on some of the state or the citywide things. And also touch on the Fed side as well and crazy times we're in with all that. And keep your email comments coming. Talk with Jeff at iCloud.com. Appreciate all those. Olivia will be by and we'll share those. Plus, check out some of my picks and stories up at talkwithjeff.com. Back in a few. The information provided on the Jeff Horvitz Show does not constitute legal, medical, financial, or tax advice. All information is the opinions of the host and guests. You should always seek the advice of a professional regarding any of these complex issues to make sure all circumstances of your situation are properly considered. Hey, if you're listening to the podcast, please give us a great review and also give us a comment in there. If you're not listening to the podcast, subscribe. Look up the Jeff Horvitz Show. Also on video, Rumble, follow us there. And on YouTube, subscribe. We appreciate everyone who's done that.
This is the Jeff Horvitz Show.
This portion of the show is brought to you by Diamond Auto Glass, where the difference is clear.com.
This is the Jeff Horvitz Show.
All right, welcome back. Jeff Horvitz here, hour two of the program. We'll finish up here with Joe Galli in just a second. Remember, if I was selling a home in the Flagstaff area right now, I'd call Kelly Broaddus with the Broaddus Properties Group, brokered by eXp. And she knows what she's doing. She has the passion and the knowledge to make sure you get top dollar for your home. She's been helping so many people for so long in the real estate business. Kelly Broaddus has surrounded herself with a great team of folks that help get your home noticed. They put a bunch into it as far as advertising, all the photos, aerial shots, and all that. Go to NorthernArizonaFineHomes.com right now. Get instant valuation on your home and learn more about Kelly Broaddus. Broaddus. And call Kelly Broaddus with the Broaddus Properties Group, brokered by eXp, at 888-446-5602. 888-446-5602. All right, Joe Galli is here with me from the Greater Flagstaff Chamber of Commerce. We hit on a lot with the legislature last hour. If you missed that, check out the podcast. A lot of bills making their way through the process. A lot of things that you're going to have to decide on as a voter, because they are referring tons of things to the ballots. This could be one of the longest ballots in Arizona history, which I'm fine with, Joe. A lot of people are complaining, oh, it's going to be too long. It's like, well, we should have an informed citizenry and voters who they can take the time, they can read it. And if they're really not into it, if they're like, it's too complicated, they're going to vote no on it. So the legislature is going to have to lay it out. Quite frankly, in plain speak, not lawyerly gooblygook.
Well, we're seeing a, I mean, there's some talk that county recorders have concerns about the amount of paper that's going to be required for the ballots, and they might not have enough.
Give me a break.
So
it's a special paper, probably.
I don't know. I'll say this. This never ceases to amaze, right? Every election is the most important election in your lifetime.
Yeah.
And this one will be no different.
Yeah. Until the next one.
Yeah.
Right. They'll find a paper. Just stop. The Alliance can print less stuff for the counties. Anyway. All right, Joe. Do you want to hit on city or you want to go federal? Let's end with federal.
Yeah. Just real quickly. Yeah. So how many times, Jeff? So 60s and 70s, I think, Johnson Nixon era, if you will, the U.S. Congress adopted the rules that said they would pass individual appropriations bills for each department of government funding. Okay, as part of the budget process. And since that time, since those rules were adopted, can you tell me how many times has Congress abided by those rules?
I would say somewhere around zero.
Well, you're very close. It's actually one.
One, okay. Yeah. That's somewhere around zero. That's impressive. How many times have they voted?
kudos to the Republicans' leadership in Congress, because part of taking over the House in this last election in 2022, Speaker McCarthy and others said, and part of the, if you recall, it wasn't just a year ago where we had, I think, 19 votes for Speaker of the House.
Yeah.
And we all suffered through that. But they said, look, some of the newcomers said, look, we want to be able to vote on individual appropriations bills. So Congress in the House has been doing that. And they've got the military, Veterans Affairs, related agencies. They've got Ag, Rural Development, FDA. They've got the Commerce, Justice, Science-related agencies. I'm okay if we didn't have a Department of Commerce. We've got Chambers, the U.S. Chamber, and so forth. I don't know why
we have there's Federal a lot of Department of Commerce. We can get rid of.
Yeah. Energy and Water Development, another one of those that I think probably not necessary. Interior, Environment-related agencies. So impacts the West quite a bit. Mm-hmm. We always like to keep a close eye on Ag and Interior. Ag, of course, Forest Service is under the Department of Agriculture, so we're always watching them closely. Here's the interesting tidbit for you, and I won't spend a lot of time on this, but the Appropriations Bill for Interior, Environment, and Related Agencies, one of the bullet points is reduces funding for the Environmental Protection Agency by nearly 10%. I almost said that with a straight face. But you get the idea. So Republicans are using the process that should be used to provide appropriations for federal government agencies. Now, of course, the federal government is funded currently through a continuing resolution through, I think, the middle of March, maybe the end of March.
Forever, too.
It's well, been, they keep re-upping it, right? Because and they keep it at, but they know that, you know, there's growth and what have you. But there's substantial cuts that have been proposed in these spending bills by the Republicans in Congress. And, of course, it'll have to be met, taken up in the Senate. And the Republicans don't have a majority in the Senate. Democrats like to spend more. So a lot of these things probably don't get to the president's desk. And who knows if this president would sign some of these spending bills. But kudos, I think, because they're having hearings, they're having spending hearings in appropriations committees on each.
Yeah,
it's needed because
it should be out in the open, all these individual items,
because we've wrapped it all up year over year over year in what's called an omnibus bill.
Yeah.
And come to an agreement and just said, okay, we're going to spend this much money. Now, you know what happened in May last year. You recall that we had to have congressional action signed by the president. And that meant that both parties had to come together to raise the debt ceiling because the federal government said, we're going to spend this much money. And they only had this much money left on the and I'm showing a shorter amount
card limit.
On the credit card.
Yeah.
And so they had to get it. Otherwise, we would have had a global catastrophe because if the American dollar, the full faith cannot be placed in the American currency and the American economy, then you know every other country in the world relies on us in some form or fashion. And so
they suspended the debt ceiling.
They keep. Well, it'll come back. By the way, it's going to come back according to the U.S. Chamber. Part of our legislative day at the down in Phoenix State Capitol, we had a U.S. Chamber rep speak from Washington, D.C., and he said, look for the debt ceiling conversation to be back January 1, 2025. So inside 10 months, we're going to have to raise the debt ceiling again so we can pay our bills.
Well, and you have to, Joe, because it's growing.
How much can this go on, though, Joe?
Yeah, it's growing by an estimated $1 trillion every 100 days. So
that's
just
interest on the debt.
That's though. Just it, yeah.
That's so, just interest on the national debt.
So yeah. Let's just look at, well, that's the national debt itself. They're saying it's growing by a trillion every 100 days or so. So let's just say your date of December 25 or so. We can figure there's going to be another $3 or $4 trillion onto the national debt. The national debt interest payments just recently surpassed national defense as the number three biggest block of expenditures that we have as
we enjoyed
US.
2 decades of essentially 0% interest.
Yeah,
right.
And ain't here anymore.
Yeah, it's not going away. And what drives me nuts is that you know I'll never forget. Our former congressman here came back and said in a chamber boardroom meeting with business leaders back in October of 21, oh, inflation is transitory.
I remember that.
And that was, but that was Speaker Pelosi's line. So
yeah.
She went and told her caucus to go out, which by the way had the majority in the House at that time because she was Speaker, right? And went and told, it was basically a lie. And it didn't give us, and of course the Fed didn't act quick enough, we all know that, to try and quell what we're living through. And it hurts us because, you know, you go back and you look at the, well, it all comes back local, right? Our increasing wage mandate goes up by the cost of living.
The CPI adjuster,
August of every year. And we've seen two massive hikes in the last 2 years, and it just puts more pressure on business. So, you know,
you
I'm
remember
not sure
that.
What the immediate answer you, is.
But you remember when they were saying it's transitory. I was like, furious. I was like, yeah, we're transiting to new higher prices that are never going to go back down. Yeah. And then we'll grow from 2 to 4% from that threshold going forward. And that's exactly where we're
that's
at
exactly
now.
Exactly where we're
I
at.
I call it the great doubling. Everything is doubled or will soon be doubled.
And you're not wrong.
No,
and,
it's killing people.
We can't take another doubling, right?
And the more
government forces employers and gets involved in labor contracts and forces them to pay employees higher. And by the way, we're watching something that's very, very dangerous that the National Labor Relations Board's called Joint Employer. So this is the nationalization of it's a rule. And recently in Congress, a couple members in the Republican caucus introduced a bill to reverse this. So it's Department of Labor creating a rule for employers that restricts employers' ability to have independent contractors, and it increases the ability for workers to unionize. Think back to 2 years ago and the attack on gig workers in California with their legislative initiative Sacramento, AB 5, Assembly Bill 5 that passed.
You're talking like your Uber drivers, maybe things like that.
Yeah, but there's independent contractors in a number of various other employment sectors, not just in those that are driving you from door to door, you know, with their own little business.
No, I just wanted people to know what a gig worker
is. Like, yeah. And that's what's that. So this administration is no friend of business. Let's be honest about it. And has been a huge proponent of labor. By the way, labor unions have seen their lowest numbers in terms of
people joining,
yeah. and joining support. So it's ironic that they're forcing this on the United States, on its citizens, through policy mandates, through different agencies, including the Department of Labor and the NLRB, all at the same time when Americans don't want it. And all it's doing is making it more costly to live in this country. It's absurd. Speaking of more costly, because I know we're short on time, I wanted to touch quickly on the local environment. Our mayor and council. Yeah.
Are you talking water issues?
Yeah.
So, I saw this one.
So, you know, buckle down, gird your loins, I would say, because we're going to see, and understandably, I don't fault the city for coming forward and saying, hey, our cost to do business has gone up as well.
Just like everybody, yeah.
And therefore, cost of delivering service for water and wastewater and taking your wastewater out of your home or your business is now more than what revenues we're obtaining annually. So we are going to see water rate hikes. The chamber is involved. I met with the water services director several times in the last 6-8 weeks. We've had him talk to our board of directors. We've had him speak with our business advocacy division. And we're obviously offering grave concern about what the impacts are to commercial and to residents. Because much like the stormwater fee increase that we lived through a year ago, we know that substantial increases in this central service, core service of the city can and will hit residents' pockets.
It's like core. You don't need water, Joe.
Well, it's a tough one because it is an essential service.
You don't need water or food or gas.
I'll tell you what I don't need. I don't need sustainability. That's what I don't need. I don't need tax dollars spent, tens of millions of dollars spent on trying to save the world.
Joe, they are only spending 5% of the city's general fund for one sustainability department. I mean, it's just $10 million a year.
Well,
that's it.
I think that's they're thinking up
some serious stuff there, Joe.
Yeah,
I mean, you don't want to hurt the thinkers. There's like 11
of
them.
Priorities need to.
I agree 100%. Everyone who listens to me every day knows that I almost mentioned the 5% of the city of Flagstaff's general fund being sucked up by the sustainability. Remember how it used to be like one person, like hawking rain barrels?
I know.
It's like, yeah, please take those rain barrels.
Remember that? Remember rooftop gardens? Yeah,
rooftop gardens. Yeah.
Every new house is going to have a rooftop garden on it so that you can feed yourself, I guess.
I don't see that happening.
We might be headed that way if these fees keep going.
I recommend everybody have a little victory garden, even doing a little herb thing in their windowsill because, man, we've got a lot of issues when it comes to farming and production and supply chains and so much food coming from overseas now. Whole nother subject there, but I think it's a great personal idea to try to supplement your
Yeah.
And plus, it's fun. I think it's fun.
Yeah. I have nothing against it.
Yeah. Nothing against Jersey.
I grew up with Jersey tomatoes. I miss them in the backyard.
And that Jersey corn. I get some good. I'm doing some corn. Some good corn. Yeah. I'll get you some this year.
Like sweet corn back east, though.
No. When my corn comes in, and as long as you pick it really quick and it's not sitting around long, it's sweet.
Is it?
You can eat it right off. Just pull off stalk and eat it.
Yeah.
You're good to go. I'll get you some.
All right. Look forward to that.
Unless the animals eat it all first, which is always possible. Farming is a tough business. Anyway, Joe is here with us. Joe Galley with the Greater Flagstaff Chamber of Commerce. I want to hit on just the water issue a little bit more.
Sure.
But real quick, I want to remind you, I'd love you to send me some email comments. Talk with Jeff at iCloud.com. I also want to remind you that if you're thinking about buying a trailer, flatbed, cargo, or dump trailer like I got at the end of last year, go to American Trailer Company just north of Flagstaff on 89. American Trailer Company, veteran owned. They're outside the city of Flagstaff, so you don't pay city sales tax, which means you're not funding the city of Flagstaff sustainability department, which is really cool. I like that. You don't have to go to Phoenix. They try to stay about the same price or even lower than Phoenix. Check them out, American Trailer Company, or go to americantraileraz.com. That's americantraileraz.com. What kind of rate increases are we looking at? Because it ain't just going to be Flagstaff. Yeah. We're seeing this, I think, all over the place. But go ahead, Joe.
So it's going to be steep. But here's what's interesting is that there's actually a restructuring of the rate. So let me give you a little timeline. About a year ago, the city hired an outside consultant to come in and look at the city's current rate structure. That consultant took a year, 10 months. They made a presentation to mayor and council back in October, jointly with the Water Commission. The city's Water Commission has been heavily engaged with mayor and council and city staff and the consultant in the path that we're currently on. A couple weeks ago, on a Monday afternoon, There was a two-hour meeting, joint meeting between Water Commission and Mayor and Council on the wastewater aspect and what that new rate structure would look like. And then in about a week or two, on a Monday evening, on the 25th of March, the city Mayor and Council will again meet with the Water Commission and hear from staff in a joint work session, 3 o'clock again at City Hall on the water and what the rate hikes will be for water. And they're playing these cards very close to their vest. It's a very sensitive issue. They know, of course, on the backs of the stormwater fee hike, that it's going to be very costly to the community. Here's what they are saying. They need about $30 million a year in increased revenue over the next 5 years for immediate capital needs, and that's including maintenance and operation of existing lines. And where we're a little bit concerned is that we're also aware that our city's wastewater system and some components of it have the potential to time out sometime down the road here. And by I mean like in 10 years or so.
Like the lines are going to break?
The actual treatment plan itself probably reaches its end of life.
Okay, so time out. You're like saying it's going to die.
Yeah.
Okay, you're being polite. You're using big words for me, Joe.
You can't ever imagine getting to that point, right?
Old. Our infrastructure in this country is getting old. We haven't taken care of it.
I mean, look, the number on that, That's a big
staggering
item. Staggering. It's a couple hundred million.
Look, Joe, it's a matter of priorities, though, and they'll argue it's different pots of money, blah blah blah. It's the fact that we're doing so many other things that we shouldn't be doing, and we've lost sight of the ball. We haven't kept our eye on the ball.
I agree.
And if we would, we'd have enough money for this. I don't mind spending more money on our water infrastructure.
Well, I would
on
love
our roads,
it if municipalities here, there, or anywhere in the state.
Yeah.
We're just municipalities. And there were some guardrails that said, you know what, while we care about these various aspects of life, we're prohibited from investing our taxpayer dollars into it because we understand that when we do, we're just basically flushing it down the toilet and it's or blowing it down Route 66 with an electric leaf blower, as I like to say. And it doesn't actually come back as a benefit to the taxpayer. So it's a waste of money.
Yeah.
Therefore, we don't have to go and put more burden on the local taxpayer, the local resident, the local commercial actor, and make it more costly for them to do business and live in this community. And we've gotten away from that. And I hope that maybe this water fee discussion and the need for investment in the city's water infrastructure will help. And to be honest with you, council's got some tough decisions ahead as it relates to this. A part of the fee structure are massive increases on capacity fees, what are essentially impact fees. Capacity fees are new hookups. They're new commercial water meter
or new houses.
New residential.
Yeah. And they want to make housing cheaper.
Exactly.
Except they add...
What a conundrum they're facing.
They add an EV charging port and, 8 feet of insulation and more capacity fees, essentially, or whatever they call it.
Your water meter is going for $5,000 to $8,000 per residential unit.
And it costs like $500 to buy a new meter, by the way.
But
they're charging. It's a capacity fee. It's a development fee is
correct.
What it really is.
So they're using it to parlay it into the future, if you will, for additional additional.
Okay, so keep an eye on
infrastructure,
on that.
Maintenance. This is the thing. This is the schedule. We got a couple work sessions in March, and then we're going to have an ordinance read in June. Mm-hmm. So we've got April and May to have public discussions with mayor and council. And then in June, they're going to adopt this in the form of a new ordinance for both water and wastewater and reclaimed as well. The reclaimed not as impactful. And then this fee hike set to go into effect September 1.
Everyone's getting hit, man.
Yeah.
And, APS just recently, they raised rates. You name it, everybody's raising their rates from your head of lettuce at the store on the low end, all the way up to vehicles, all the way in between for gas prices, for electricity, for water. It's like an unstoppable train.
It is,
Joe. It's amazing.
Here it is right here. Tuesday, April 16th, council meeting. Here is the item on the work session. Notice of intention, water rate fees.
Okay. Day after tax day, by the way, April 15th. So you can pay the money into the big system. Yeah. So they can borrow another $1 trillion every 100 days or so.
Crazy.
Real quick, we got like 2 minutes. What do you see on the national level? I mean, with the primaries pretty much wound down.
Yeah, so thanks.
Who do you think's winning?
Yeah, I think. What do you think? I'm not happy about it, but incumbency, the power of incumbency. I think what's tough for the former president Trump is that the economy is still blazing. I mean, it is still strong, and history, modern political history in our lifetimes. This isn't 84. It's reminiscent of 84. Excuse me. With the exception that we've seen some inflation. I don't think the presidential debates are going to go well for the current occupant of the White House.
I would love to see it. He has to. They'll juice him up, though. Weekend at Bernie's 3.
Hopefully, he doesn't fall off the dais. I think it's a tough one, but I would like to see the former president come back to I would like to see the messaging to be more on how individual lives in America can be improved with less government. The tie-in. How we're going to get government out of your way so that you can get on with working and being successful and starting your own business. And, you know,
I think
you hear constantly about all these jobs that are going to Mexico, jobs that are going overseas. Yeah.
How do we get it back here? But here's what I think. I think Trump does have a decent shot at this because Biden's different because so many Americans are like, the guy's gone, right? So I think Trump has a very, very good shot. What I do worry about, though, it will be interesting to see if he kills the administrative state or at least watch him try to. He's maybe one of our last hopes to do this.
Burn it to the ground is what I say.
Yeah, exactly. What I worry about, though, is right as he's getting in all of this financial stuff and all of the trillions in debt and everything, the dependencies
you see
in this country. I see him getting in there right when it all hits.
Market
and then all
collapse.
Of a sudden he's going to have to take action.
Yeah.
And then he's juicing the economy because he's a big spender too. Nothing like Biden, but it's going to be put clearly on his shoulders and we're going to be in a hellstorm. Plus
that was 2008. That was Bush,
exactly,
Obama.
Exactly.
McCain.
Plus the, the American cities are, you know, being looted and riot because people are flipping out because Trump's in there again.
Yeah.
Repeat of 2020. I don't know. This is one of the strangest times in American history. Shall we live in interesting times is the old saying, but maybe not this interesting.
It is.
Maybe it's a little less interesting.
Very
all right, Joe.
Much so. Thank you,
I really,
Jeff.
Really appreciate the updates.
Always.
And talk with you soon.
Yep.
And stick around because I'm going to give you an update on our trip and bring in Olivia, see if Angela's available as well. Update from Greece. So stick around for that. Comments always welcome. Talk with Jeff at iCloud.com. If your heater goes out, or more importantly now, we're getting towards that point where you got to get your HVAC system, especially the AC portion of that, tuned up and ready to go. Well, I don't know. Maybe not, because we do have a chief heat officer in the state now, so they're probably going to fix heat. So until that happens, keep Gettle's High Desert Mechanical's number. Put it in your phone. Put it on your fridge, whatever you do, in case you need service on your HVAC system. Gettle's High Desert Mechanical is what Angela and I use. Gettle's. They do a great job for us. 928-567-2200. 928-567-2200. Or go to Gettle's HDM. That's GOE. TTLS, GettlesHDM.com. Back in a minute. Hey, if you're listening to the podcast, please give us a great review and also give us a comment in there. If you're not listening to the podcast, subscribe. Look up the Jeff Horvitz Show. Also on video, Rumble, follow us there. And on YouTube, subscribe. We appreciate everyone who's done that.
You're listening to the Jeff Horvitz Show.